I want to give you an overview of how to make an audiobook at home using Audacity, specifically such that it's good enough to get you accepted onto Audible. This is for anyone who wants to get started on a budget and needs as much information as succinctly as possible. I'll also show you some tips and tricks that are hard to find elsewhere. I'm going to discuss equipment, the recording space, the recording setup, the editing and mastering, and very briefly, the video. Let's get started. First up is the microphone. The takeaway is that a 50 quid USB mic will probably be good enough to get you onto Audible. But naturally, the more you spend, the better it'll sound. Some good entry points are shown on screen. USB mics top out at around 100 quid. Above that, you start running into XLR mics, which need additional audio interfaces and sometimes preamps to use. If you want to do voiceovers as a business, you may as well start with a mid-ranged XLR setup, but if you're just experimenting, a USB mic will be fine. The mic I currently use is a Von Neumann TLM-102, which cost 500 quid with a shock mount, and I'm very happy with it. A popular mic is the Blue Yeti. I have one and it's okay, but it's not especially aimed at audiobooks, so I'd advise against it if that's your intention. I think it's tailored to be a jack of all trades. Throughout this recording, I'm going to change mics and surrounding environment, so you can get a feel for what each sounds like. When I do, I'll show the relevant details in the corner like this. Aside from USB and XLR connections, there are two main types of mics: dynamic and condensers. Dynamics are better for podcasts and for loud sounds. They tend to be more hard-wearing. The most popular dynamic mic that everyone seems to use is the Shure SM7B. Condensers are, broadly speaking, better for vocals in treated rooms. If you're recording casually, either will be fine. If you're committed to voiceovers, I suggest a condenser. You'll also come across the term cardioid. This refers to the direction the microphone picks up sound. For audiobooks, cardioid is perfect. Omnidirectional and bidirectional are worse for audiobooks because they'll pick up more environmental noise around the mic, which we don't want. If you buy an XLR microphone, you'll need an audio interface. This is what you connect the XLR cable to before connecting to your computer. The most popular budget audio interface is the Focusrite. It's what I use, and I can recommend it. If you've bought an XLR condenser mic, the Focusrite can also provide it with the 48 volts of phantom power it requires. If you've bought an XLR dynamic mic, you don't need this, so it's best to turn it off. The Focusrite also has a built-in preamp which increases the volume of your microphone before it hits your computer. But because it's a two-in-one solution, it's not perfect. It works well enough for most condenser mics, but if you're using a dynamic mic, especially one with low output volume like the SM7B, you'll need an extra preamp. The Cloudlifter is the standard one most YouTubers use. It goes in between your mic and the audio interface like this. If you're spending more on your setup, you may want a preamp anyway, regardless of which type of mic you have. Naturally, the better the hardware used to amplify the volume before it hits the software, the less overall noise and hiss your recording will have later. Extra things to buy. I recommend a pop filter because they cost around 10 quid and can make a big difference. They reduce plosives, which are unpleasant sounds from the letter P. For example, Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. And with the pop filter on, Peter Piper picked a pack of pickled peppers. There are more expensive pop filters, but I've not used them. The £10 ones seem to work fine for me. Headphones. If you're on a budget, then just use any pair of wired headphones. However, if you can afford it, I recommend some studio headphones. Consumer headphones tend to boost various frequencies to make music sound better and therefore improve their sales, but this is not what you want when editing. Studio headphones are the opposite. They aim to keep a flat sound profile and portray the raw audio in its naked purity. I use and can recommend a pair of Audio-Technica MX40Xs. Alternatively, the Sony MDR7506s are frequently referred to as an industry standard, so you can't go wrong with them. Studio arms make maneuverability of the mic easier. They're more useful for streaming and podcasting, and I don't actually use mine for audiobooks. The cheap £20 ones do work, The advantage of the expensive brand name ones is longer reach and a bit more stability. Shock mounts can be purchased to reduce the noise from any knock or vibration on the arm or table holding the mic. They're not absolutely necessary, but they definitely help. I'd suggest getting one if you're spending enough to get an XLR mic, but they frequently come bundled with new mics anyway, so you may be able to pick them up cheaply even if you're only spending £100 or so. A super budget alternative is to put a folded towel or other padding on the table, which helps a little, but not a lot. Enough about equipment. Next, your recording space. The most important thing is to cut out as much external noise as possible. This means air conditioning units, fridges, neighbours, roads, etc. The best way to do this is to move away from the source of the noise and turn off sockets to things like fridges and aircons. If there is a loud external noise whilst recording, just redo the take. Editing it out in Audacity takes ages and frequently isn't even possible. Next is sound dampening. If there are lots of hard walls and surfaces around you, then your voice will reverberate and sound unpleasant. The way to prevent this is to put soft items in the room that absorb sound. The cheap way to solve this is with blankets and cushions. Many people record in their closet for this reason. This is perfectly adequate, it's just a little inconvenient. The more permanent solution is acoustic foam on the walls. This gimp dungeon of a setup cost me about £150 and saves a lot of time hanging sheets or draping duvets around whenever I want to record. Generally, the more you place the better, but even a few can make a huge difference. If you only have a few, aim to place them where the sound is most likely to bounce back and forth, e.g. two flat walls directly in front and behind the mic, and directly overhead if possible. You can buy mini recording booths like this, which help if you can't dampen the entire room. They're partially effective, but not essential if your room is well treated. There are also flat pack recording booths you can buy for around $10,000. I wish I had the space and cash for one of these, but they're not too amenable to London apartments. Probably best to avoid them until you're certain this is your new career. On to recording setup. You need to be able to read and turn pages without making any noise like mouse clicks, rustling, table thumps, or paper pages turning. Some people use a tablet. Personally, I have my laptop open above the mic. Some people stand up when narrating. This can give you more energy for commercial voiceovers and acting, but can be tiring for longer-form audiobook narrations. If your computer is in the same room, make sure there's no fan noise coming from it. For laptops, putting them in low battery mode can sometimes fix this. Something I recommend is setting up a nice readable template file. Copy your script into Word, change the background to green to be easier on the eyes, and the font to something you find most readable. Times New Roman, Helvetica, and Verdana are all good options. Use paragraph and font options to increase spacing between letters and lines to something you're comfortable with. Then use the file as a formatted template to save time in the future. Before narrating, you can also highlight words ahead of time if you think you need to emphasize them. I do this when I'm trying to convey the meaning of a more complicated philosophical argument, or if there are two voices in a script. Some people like to connect their headphones and hear themselves as they record. To do this, you need to use the monitoring jack on your mic or audio interface, not your computer. The computer's audio will always be slightly delayed and will throw you off. You also need to use good isolating headphones to avoid having the sound feed back into the mic. If you're recording somewhere with poor ventilation, take breaks and try to change the air regularly. It's not dangerous, but CO2 buildup can actually slow your thinking down and make narrating harder. Finally, keep your phone away from the cables, as it can cause interference. That's the physical setup. Now for Audacity's setup. Here's the fast version. The defaults should look like this. Make sure your microphone is selected, set the input to mono, and press record to check it's working. A natural reading from about 8 to 9 inches away should have its peaks above 0.1 on the linear scale or around minus 25 decibels on the decibel scale. Adjust the input gain on the microphone or audio interface until it does. Now here's the explanation. We use mono because there's only one sound source, and recording in stereo will just double the file size for no benefit. For this reason, mono is preferred by audiobook platforms like Audible. 44.1 kHz is the sample rate, how many times the audio is sampled per second. The Nyquist theorem says we divide this by 2 to find the uppermost frequency range that can be accurately reconstructed. So recording at 44.1 kHz means a best case signal of 0 to 22.05 kHz in Audacity. The human ear can hear up to around 20 kHz, so this is perfectly sufficient. 48 kHz is fine too, if you want to be doubly sure nothing is being lost. There isn't much point going higher unless you're making audiobooks for dogs. Bitrate is the amount of data per sample. So 44.1 kHz at 32-bit means 32 bits of information 44,100 times a second. In audio terms, this reflects how much dynamic range you have, meaning the difference in volume between the loudest and softest possible sounds that can be represented. Generally, the higher bit depth you record at, the less noise there will be and the more room you have to play with. Most USB mics will provide 16-bit audio, and XLR audio interfaces will provide 24-bit. The argument for recording in 32 bits is that you don't lose anything upscaling, and it's better for editing. I don't know if this is true or not, but the only downside I can see is slightly larger file sizes during editing, which is rarely an issue these days. You can also modify the toolbar and visible effects in Audacity. It's beyond the scope of this video to go into all that, but here's a screenshot of what mine looks like if you want to match it. I prefer to only see things I actually use and remove everything else. One thing I highly recommend, however, is installing these plugins. To do so, paste them into your plugins folder and then enable them through the effects dropdown. Finally, if you record and edit on different computers, saving directly into a cloud service like OneDrive can be very convenient. Now to volume. The aim is to get it as loud as possible with as little noise as possible. To do this, boost as loud as you can with hardware, then go the rest of the way with software. This should provide the best signal-to-noise ratio. However, it's essential to avoid clipping. This is when peaks go above the maximum volume and get cut off. When this happens, you can't repair it by subsequently lowering the volume in Audacity, because the data has been permanently lost. As such, you need to decrease the hardware gain until you can reliably speak without any clipping occurring. Remember, as you narrate, you'll get quite a few spikes in volume, so make sure you give yourself plenty of headroom. As a guideline, the gain on my preamp is set to 70%, and the peaks of a standard narration tend to lie around 0.2 on the linear scale or minus 12 dB on the decibel scale. To calibrate this for your setup, just speak into your mic and look where the peaks are landing, then turn the gain up or down until they're peaking around minus 12 dB. Next, a bunch of stuff to keep in mind whilst narrating. You want to be about 6 to 12 inches away from the mic, depending on what mic you have. But if there's ever a point where a character needs to shout, step back slightly from the mic to make sure you don't clip. Even if you have a pop filter, avoid blowing air into the mic. If you struggle with this, move the mic up or to the side slightly so it's offset from the front of your mouth. Try to stay natural, but also to speak clearly. That's sort of a paradox, but what I mean is to pay attention and avoid having words like and becoming an or n. Don't talk too fast, a very common problem early on. Don't snap at words. Elongated words with small gaps between them are easier to understand than fast words with elongated gaps, especially at the 1.5 to 2x speed many people listen at. For example, this sentence is spoken with short words and long gaps between them, and this sentence is spoken with elongated words and short gaps between them. I've exaggerated both of those, but for a given length of recording, the elongated words are easier to understand and much more pleasant to listen to. Here's an example of that on the screen. The two tracks are the same sentence and the same length, but one is spoken with elongated words, the other with elongated gaps. The first is much more pleasant to listen to at high speeds. Next, do as many retakes as necessary. If your book is being listened to by 10,000 people, any small mistake is being magnified 10,000 times, so spend the time to fix it. Unless you're very used to reading aloud, when starting you'll probably need to do a lot of retakes. This is normal. Even now, I do quite a few. Consider the meaning of what you're narrating and whether you're conveying it accurately. If you're not, redo it. The aim is to make something useful for the listener, not convenient for you. Here's an example of what I mean. Take this sentence and consider the effect different stresses have on it. I didn't say he stole the money. 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 Each has a different meaning, so make sure you understand what it is the author is trying to convey before recording it. On that point, try to avoid slipping into a fixed cadence. This is a little harder to explain, but when you read for hours on end, it's easy to fall into a standard pattern of speech and use it for everything. It makes narrating easier, but you stop conveying the exact meaning of what you're reading. I'm guilty of it as much as anyone, and that's why I mention it. The easiest place to hear this is from news presenters. They speak publicly without time to rehearse, and so fall back on fixed narration patterns regardless of what they're reading. It's totally understandable because they can't do retakes, but we can, so we should aim to read each sentence with thought. It's totally understandable because they can't do retakes, but we can, so we should aim to read each sentence with thought. Speaking of deep thoughts, I'd like to mention the channel sponsor, Shortform. Shortform has hundreds of book summaries, many of which are even narrated. It's a fantastic resource for getting overviews of books, either to decide what to read next, or even to get video ideas from. Sign up at shortform.com/vox. Advert over. Now let's roll on to a discussion of punch and roll versus continuous recording methods. Punch and roll is where you effectively edit as you go. Whenever you make a mistake, you press a key to redo the take, either overwriting the mistake or placing it side by side on a separate track. With continuous, you do one big long take and then edit it all later. I'm going to describe the continuous method here, as it's simpler to get started with and is what I use. But punch and roll is probably the more practical way if you want to put out a lot of long-form content at a faster pace. If you want more information on the punch and roll process, check the video in the top right. With either method, you're still going to end up doing multiple takes. But keep in mind that narrations need to flow continuously. If you're on your 10th take for a paragraph, are you still reading it in a manner which blends in with the previous one? If cuts become noticeable, it breaks the fourth wall, and listeners will be jolted out of their immersion and recall they're listening to someone narrating in their bedroom. Be it a fiction book or a Seneca letter, this ruins the effect somewhat. If you're using the continuous method, one way to keep track of takes is with a clicker. Every mistake you make, just click it, and you'll be able to see visually where the errors are. You can also get creative and come up with a system for one, two, or three clicks, meaning different things. Mouth clicks. These are all the nasty, wet sounds your mouth makes whilst speaking. This is what they look like on the waveform and the spectral form. Nobody likes them. To lessen them, avoid eating before recording, especially oily or fatty foods. Cleanse your palate with apple cider vinegar, or just move back a bit from the mic. But with all that, you'll still get them. You can remove them in Audacity with this plugin, and with some manual techniques I'll demonstrate later. Speaking of which, on to editing and mastering. Editing is just making cuts. Mastering is applying software effects to make the recording sound better. Specifically for our case, we need to bring the audio in line with Audible standards. Here's the aim, not necessarily in order. Remove background noise and hiss. Remove unpleasant mouth clicks, plosives, bumps, and knocks. remove harsh sibilant sounds, increase the overall RMS volume to greater than negative 23 decibels, make sure there are no peaks above minus 3 decibels, decrease the volume of breaths. The risk in mastering is to be too aggressive and ruin the audio, so for the most part we're going to err on the side of caution. In brief, this is the chain I follow. Remove 80 Hz using the EQ tool. Cut out spikes that aren't part of the narration, then amplify the audio as loud as it will go without clipping. Run the denoise tool. Mark all the takes. Do all the cuts. Run the mouth declicker plugin with these settings. Manually remove the clicks it missed and fill in errors it made. Manually reduce breath noises. Manually tweak volumes of sections so they're in line. Amplify to max volume again. Run a soft limiter. Amplify back in line with audible requirements. Run a de-esser. Run the audible checker on each separate segment you're going to submit. Organize the tracks for distribution. Next, the steps in detail. But before starting, I strongly suggest you set up some keyboard shortcuts to make things faster. Here's what I use, but you should bind whatever you use most often. You can set key bindings from the Edit Preferences panel, and you can create macros from the Tools Macros panel, as shown. Macros allow you to run a chain of effects, or, as I do, single effects but with saved settings. For example, a negative 0.2 decibel amplification. You can then keybind that to quickly run it on selections, which will make the following steps much quicker. Step 1. Remove everything below 80 Hz using the EQ tool. This immediately removes many of the bumps, thumps, and plosive sounds. Here's a visual example of that happening. It also makes the narration sound a little less muddy, something my voice struggles with. A tertiary advantage is the waveform looks cleaner too, which I find makes the editing process easier. Step 2. Amplify the audio as loud as it'll go without clipping. This just makes editing easier because you can hear things clearer. It's a good idea to cut out any loud noises that aren't part of the narration prior to doing this. They'll show up as sharp spikes in the audio. Optionally, you can choose to allow these loud noises to clip when amplifying, but I feel it's safer to investigate and remove them all first. Step 3. Denoise. This reduces the background hiss, but it does damage the good audio as well. However, provided you don't do it too aggressively, it should improve things overall. Here's an example. This is an example of a cheap mic without any noise reduction, and this is an example of a cheap mic with noise reduction. These are the settings I use. A reduction of around 13 decibels should be fine, but by all means, experiment. To use the tool, select an area of background sound, click Get Noise Profile to train the software on that, then select the entire segment and press Remove Noise. Make sure you train it on an area that has nothing but room noise in it. To ensure you're doing this, switch to the spectral view. Here you can more easily see the noise profile, including little aberrations like this that would make it more destructive. Always look for a clean section. Personally, I do this segment by segment, either where I've naturally taken recording breaks or in 30 to 45 minute chunks. Background noise can change over time, so I figure giving it a new profile to work with every 30 minutes should yield slightly better results. Step 4. Editing. The key here is to make cuts seamlessly so that the tone, style, and volume of your voice doesn't change. If you've done a lot of takes, zip through the recording and mark them all first using the Split tool. This avoids you carefully editing sections later, only to find a new take 5 minutes down the track that you weren't aware of. Make sure you use the Z key before every cut to automatically zero the selection at crossings, even when cutting between silence. If you cut a peak into a trough, you'll get a nasty tsk sound in the audio. This is what it looks like. Pressing Z avoids this 99% of the time. Do the same when applying any effect as well. By the way, it is possible to cut mid-sentence or even mid-word, but it is much harder. Sometimes, though, it'll actually give you better results than a massive change in tone between two takes done minutes apart. Step 5. Declicking. This is what a mouth click looks like and sounds like.
Hold.
You can remove 80% of them by running this plugin, then the final 20% using the Spectral Viewer and Spectral EQ tool. The Spectral Viewer seems to me a massively underutilized tool. It shows you the volume at every frequency, which is a really useful feature because it allows you to select individual frequencies and boost or suppress them. You can do this with the EQ tool in the waveform, but you're blind as to what's happening without listening back. It's like using an axe when you need a scalpel. Seeing the effect visually is far clearer. As an example, there's a mouth click in this piece of audio. Can you tell where it is and how to remove it with the EQ tool? But now try and identify it in the Spectral Viewer. Goodbye. This is why I have a spectral edit of minus 12 decibels, keybound to Alt W. It allows me to do this in seconds. Whilst removing clicks, the plugin sometimes cuts a little too deep into the underlying audio. When this happens, you can use the Spectral EQ tool to do the inverse and boost those sections back by 12 to 24 decibels, which mostly cleans things up. For my voice, I find it happens most commonly during intakes of breath. Speaking of breaths, step 6, I manually reduce them by about 6 decibels each. I think there are plugins for this, but I don't trust them. I do it manually. It doesn't take as long as you might think, as you'll be doing it in conjunction with fixing the mouth clicks. To do it quickly, select the breath, press Z, then press your amplification hotkey. Here's a tip. Audacity's last command action isn't overwritten by the use of macros, so if you apply a negative amplification once, then use the Spectral EQ macro shortcut, the redo command will still refer to your negative amplification. This means you can select the breath, press Z, then press redo previous effect to quickly reduce the volume. Finally, I manually adjust volumes of sections so they're in line. If you've recorded over several days, then the volume of each section might be slightly different. Bring it back in line so the wave patterns and RMS volumes of each section are similar. Step 7. I don't do this, but you can apply an equalization now if you like. This is where you adjust the volume of different frequencies. If you have a slightly higher nasally voice, you can boost the bass frequencies and vice versa. But this takes a good ear and a lot of experimentation. Audacity's not great for it, as you can't adjust it as you listen back, like in other programs, meaning there's a lot of back and forth in applying and re-listening, undoing and then reapplying. Eventually, you'll end up with a profile that works with your voice, but you'll still need to adjust it each time, as each recording is slightly different. Personally, I don't use EQ much, as I'm never sure I'm actually improving things. I would advise against it for beginners. Step 8. Amplify to max volume. Audible requires the RMS volume to be above minus 23 decibels. RMS, root mean squared, is a measure of the average volume of a piece of audio. If you want to know how it's calculated, go read Wikipedia. Step 9. Limiting. At the moment, your track probably looks very jagged. Volume spikes make listening less pleasant, so we need to fix this. Audible has a requirement that these peaks don't go above minus 3 decibels, so we need to reduce the highs and bring up the lows. One way to do this is by using a compressor, which increases the volume of quiet sounds and decreases the volume of loud sounds. If used correctly, they give you a better sounding file. However, they're easy to use incorrectly and kind of require their own tutorial. Here's what a badly done compression sounds like. There's a certain pumping quality to the audio and sometimes randomly spiked breath noises. Radio stations tend to use a lot of compression because they're going out live and need to ensure nothing clips. For this reason, some people associate the pumpy nature of compression with professional audio. However, I feel it's best to be much less aggressive for use in audiobooks. With all that said, I recommend avoiding compression while getting started. Instead, a very simple workaround to get 80% of the results is to use a soft limiter. Soft limiters reduce volumes as they approach a set decibel level. The net effect is like applying a compressor to the loud volumes but missing the quiet ones. They're much simpler to apply without damaging the track. The downside is you get a little less control over how the dampening is done, and it doesn't boost the quiet sections. You'll need to do that separately by amplifying the entire track again. These are the settings I use. After running the limiter, run the ACX check again to confirm you're meeting the requirements. If after amplifying you're still under the RMS volume requirements, undo the limiter and reapply it a bit more aggressively, then amplify the whole track up so that you're in line. Step 10. Run the de-esser or desibrillator. The purpose of this plugin is to reduce the sharp S sounds. It does this by reducing the volume of the frequencies associated with those sharp sounds if they go above a certain volume. It's essentially a compressor or soft limiter for specific frequencies. How much you need to use it depends on your voice and your microphone. Personally, I always run it as if it's not needed, it tends to have no effect anyway, so it doesn't have much of a downside. Assuming my RMS volume is around minus 22 decibels and my peaks are around minus 3 decibels, then these settings work for me. This is a before and after of it running. By the way, you can also fix these sharp S's manually using the spectral EQ tool, but it will take a very long time. If you run the de-esser, run the ACX check again to confirm your RMS volumes haven't dropped too low. Step 11. Organizing for distribution. Exporting multiple files is necessary for audiobooks and recommended for videos since it helps in organizing the video edit. To create multiple files, you can either put the audio in separate tracks like this, or you can create labels by double-clicking between two splits like this. Then press Export Multiple and choose how you'd like them named. Always make sure you've got this box ticked to keep exports in mono. There's also a metadata file which I suggest filling out. You can create a template and have it apply to each individual file. It helps sorting files on the file system and looks more professional in any audiobook submission. When it comes to file types, here's what you need to know. WAV or WAV is lossless, which means you can export it and re-import it without losing quality. MP3 is lossy, meaning it loses quality every time you export it, but gives lower file sizes. MP3 comes in constant and variable bit rates. Variable changes its bit rate depending on how much information there is in each audio section. It gives higher quality per kilobyte, but is less compatible with some players. Constant uses a constant bit rate for every minute of audio. It gives a lower quality per kilobyte, but is more compatible. Generally, I've never had an issue with compatibility and use variable unless I'm submitting to Audible, who request constant. If you're making a video from your recording, go with a high-quality export, because your video editor is going to re-encode it again, then YouTube is going to re-encode that. So the higher quality you start with, the better the result at the end. If you're publishing to Audible, ACX requests 190k or above constant bitrate file. They also have a lot of requirements with respect to the arrangement of tracks, lead-in times, etc., so make sure you follow them. You can find them all here. Finally, when you export as an MP3, you tend to lose some volume. This is because certain frequencies get cut and the compression slightly alters things. So make sure your RMS volumes are a little above the ACX requirements before compressing them. Otherwise, they may fall below it once you've exported them. If submitting for publication, I suggest re-importing all MP3 files into Audible and checking them one by one. Be aware as well that the RMS calculation ACX use may be slightly different to this plugin, and results may vary by plus or minus 0.1 decibels. Last of all comes the video if you're doing YouTube. I'm not going to cover this in detail, suffice it to say, I recommend using DaVinci Resolve. To me, it seems the best free video editor that exists. It doesn't watermark your videos or severely limit you. And once you decide to buy it, you can get a lifetime license for $300 rather than paying monthly for all of eternity. This has been a somewhat quick introduction to producing an audiobook at home. There's loads of ways to go about it, and I've left a lot out, so by all means share your own tips in the comments. This was just to help you get started. If it inspires you to start narrating, put whatever you do on YouTube and share a link with everyone below to get some feedback. But remember to check whatever you narrate is out of copyright before uploading. If you'd like to support the channel, use the Amazon affiliate links to buy all your future recording gear, subscribe to short-form book summaries using the referral code VOX, or just donate via PayPal. I also have a Discord channel here, and if you're interested in learning Mandarin, you can sign up to hear about my upcoming audio course here.